Welcome back to another episode of First Strike, the official podcast of the F2F Tour, the place to listen to the best players playing on the F2F Tour and get the latest news, especially from me, because I'm on the inside, behind the scenes. I'm joined once again with Andy and Derek, and we've got two awesome guests lined up for this episode. We've got Christophe Bourgeois and Michael Van Vals, who both ended up top eighting the recent regional championship, but didn't want to talk about some sweet F2F Tour news. We announced we will finally start having some coverage. Our plan is to expand because we wanted to be super ready and have a product that we were proud of. People all the time asking, why is there no streaming? Why is there no streaming? But that's because our team wanted it to make sure that we dot our I's, cross our T's. And really excited for the first time, starting with day two in Ottawa, we're going to have coverage. We're going to have PV as one of the commentators for that event. So someone we consider one of the best of all time. Someone Andy considers the best of all time. Alias V, Hayu, and Manny Davoodi will finalize that team. So finally, we'll have streaming. And depending on how that goes, we're looking to expand that for the next RCs. That's, I think, Toronto, Edmonton in June. So we'll see. We'll see. But this is a starting point. Hope people will enjoy it and hope we'll be able to feature Andy and Derek on the show, on the cast. So, but don't want to spend too much time before we get to the interviews. But for you guys, outside of everything we've talked about on the show, is there anything to add, really? What are your reaction to the coverage announcement?
Super exciting. Magic coverage is really cool. Watching yourself on Magic coverage is a super cool feeling, and it like gives people a reason to want to go to these events and something to be really excited about. Like when someone gets their first like feature match on camera, it's something that they like take with them for the rest of their Magic career, depending on how big they end up being, but it's something that they don't forget for sure. And to give this opportunity to a lot of people in the day two in Ottawa is excellent. It's something that a lot of people have talked about wanting. So the best piece of advice I have is to watch it, for the love of God.
Well, you know what's going to happen? Our team's going to feature Misplaced Ginger. His star is just going to get bigger. I don't know how you feel about that, Andy.
Well, once stars get big enough, they do explode. So I guess we can keep growing for a little bit. Maybe get that ego in check, you know?
Yeah, not a chance this ego gets in check. Andy, I think you'll have to finish better than me at one of these events if you want to start running your mouth, you know, because I'm kind of rolling you across the board right now.
Yeah, you've had a good year, man. You've had a good year, and I'm super happy for you. Oh, it's just unfortunate that I'm just better.
All right.
It's just too bad I have more natural talent.
All right. Well, we have an event in 10 days, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, I don't want to say too much because this is on one of your private Twitter, Derek. But I want to talk about how you feel about this last year being somewhat viable, like as a full time Magic creator. Can you speak to that a little?
Yeah, this has been actually an insane year for me. I've tried the streaming thing multiple times now. I think this is my second or third. And, this year, like I think I like quote unquote blew up, post COVID, like I didn't know what was going to happen with Magic. And I thought about, doing something else with my time, and then decided that I think most of the time I would just rather be playing or talking or thinking about Magic. So why not try to make it a thing? And so far I've been successful in that. Not everybody has this opportunity, and not everybody, like, I believe that when you're successful in life or in a lot of things, you have to get lucky. And I've had a very fortunate, lucky year. I've put in a lot of work, but nothing really, like, without luck, I don't think this would happen. So I'm very lucky. I'm very fortunate. And this goes back also to like the coverage thing of I'm happy that we have Magic back. I'm happy that there's a way for us to enjoy Magic culture call it that if you want, and be able to like share that with other people and have that experience with others. Cause without like the gathering, it wouldn't be as fun, right? And so a lot of good feelings all around.
One question I had for you is I've seen you do, you know, the two paths you've taken are, or plans of attack, or like streaming a lot on Twitch, come up with guides on Patreon. Have you thought about bringing back the vlog, doing some YouTube, doing some, you know, TikTok? Are there other avenues of attack, do you think, in 2023 for Misplaced Ginger?
I have a lot of vlog footage that is just not posted. YouTube is so difficult for me personally. With Twitch, it's very easy. You set some stuff up, you turn on the camera, that's it. You do that for like 4 to 6 hours a day, and then you write a bit once a week. YouTube, like, I'm a perfectionist until I'm not, and then when I'm not, I just don't care. And so it's very hard for me to put something out and be happy with it and have people like think people will want to watch it. And then if they don't want to watch it, it's like, oh, what's the point of doing YouTube? Where YouTube is a lot more of just like posting consistently, which I'm also just not doing. So I think there's a lot of room to grow. There's a lot of stuff to work on in content, and specifically with the way Magic is going from now on, when we talk about Commander, like, I think content is king. And so, you know, if whether it's streaming or coverage or whatever, I think I got to get out there and start doing these things more and better. And yeah, there will be more vlogs as soon as I do them, I guess, or they go out. But yeah, a lot of room to grow, a lot of stuff to do. Maybe not TikTok, because Magic's kind of boring to watch. But
all right, I'll save this for next episode, because there's going to be a lot to talk about this. But the Lord of the Rings set has a chance to be a huge set, because we've seen the different strategies WotC is employing to hype the set. And we're seeing that in the sales, how popular the collector booster boxes went for pre-order. Went away really fast on our site once, you know, they started announcing the serialized cards and stuff like that. So it's going to be a huge set, I think. And we can talk about the mechanics and the set in a more non-guest episode. But for now, to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed these two interviews, and see you in the next one. And now we've got Christophe Bourgeois on the show, who also just top-8ed the recent regional championship. Did I get your last name right, Christophe?
You did. You nailed it. That was beautiful.
Yes. Being from Quebec myself, I better have nailed it. Welcome to the show. Really excited. David Rude probably is really excited to hear that you're on the show and is probably listening to the episode. I see that you have some Team Harry T ties. So let's get right to it. How did you get started in Magic? What LGS? Well, you probably play at Harry T's, but go give us some background.
Yeah, for sure. So I was raised in Alberta, and then I came to Toronto in 2013 for school. And at my university, there was just a bunch of guys playing like a cube in the common room. And then one day I just walked in and I was like, what's going on? Kind of started from there. So it was just, you know, kitchen table at first. And then I didn't really play that much throughout university. But then around 2017 is when I was kind of getting interested into, that's when I graduated, I guess. So it kind of makes sense that that's when I decided I'd have a go at some PPTQs and stuff. And then I met David Rude in the finals of a PPTQ. And that's, I guess, kind of where the spark started. And I wanted to see how far I could get with it.
Man, you've been everywhere then. You DM'd me that you were born in Quebec. Then you grew up in Alberta. And then you flew to Ontario.
That's right. Yeah. So I left Quebec when I was 3. And so my French is not very good. But my mom speaks French to me and I respond in English. So like I understand it reasonably well. I just just not great at speaking it.
I did the total opposite than you in terms of Magic in school. It was like my slacking off activity, or right after Friday I was done my classes, I would go to the local game store. I didn't get more competitive after it was done.
That's funny.
But then, so what was the initial, so you got friendly with David Rude, you became more friends, and when did you get connected with that group, and who's still active among that group that you're close with in Magic? Because we know, I don't know where the detective's at anymore, Mr. Dhaliwal, but maybe he's you know, in and out playing other games.
Yeah, so I guess like Harry Tarantula was like my LGS, and I'd go there occasionally for like an FNM and like a pre-release. And then, yeah, so I met David Rude at Nats in 2017. I wasn't playing much, so I wasn't queued for Nats. I didn't have the Planeswalker points, so I played like a limited PPTQ, and then that's where I met him. And then I guess over the next year or so, I was like having some like decent like success at the Harry Tarantula series. And then so D-Rude ended up kind of like taking me under his wing. And there was the team at that point was just D-Rude and Gabe Sang. And then they added on Andrew Abella, Sean Dhaliwal, and Isaac Crute at the time. So there were six of us. And it was nice to just be part of a group that, you know, wanted to practice together. And like, these guys were all like way more experienced than me. So it was awesome to start to learn from some great players.
Did you join them on their Flesh and Blood ventures?
So not so much. I they started showing me like a little bit. They were teaching me the game, and I think it's a great game. It's awesome. Around that time, there was going to be an OP announcement for Magic. So I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to get into Fab. Gonna wait and see what happens with Magic. And luckily, like, the OP announcement for Magic was like pretty reasonable, so I was like, not gonna get into Fab. I went to one event. There was like a joint like Pro Tour GP, so I was gonna fly and then play the GP, just borrow a deck, have some fun. But my flight got canceled, so I ended up going the next day and then just hanging out, playing side events and like going to dinner and stuff. But I never really got into Fab too much, but it's a good game.
good. Did you qualify for any of the previous, now we're dropping the word season, we're calling them rounds, the previous round, like Toronto, Calgary, did you qualify for either of them? Did you play in them?
Yeah, so I played in both Toronto and Calgary. I played Rakdos Midrange. I went 9-5 in both of them, so good for a little cash, but not much else. And then that's actually part of the reason why I played Grixis last weekend, was I figured, you know, there would be some overlap on play patterns, and obviously Fable of the Mirror Breaker is pretty insane and it's a lot of fun to play with, so I thought I'd give it a shot.
Derek, this guy's got to be your kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, he actually top eighted with Grixis where I was like top 20, so, you know, on the same page. Very much so, and very much in the camp of not wanting to spend more money on standard and playing the good cards. So can't really go wrong with that one. I guess it's better than showing up with mono blue, that's for sure.
And you also played like your preferred deck in the previous round. So how do you prepare for these RCs? Do you work with anyone close on the Team Harry T, or do you just play online, work on decks yourself?
I mostly prep solo. So like David Rude is not really playing Magic anymore. Neither is Gabe Sang or like Abella. Sean is like playing like just a little
Sean,
bit.
Sean,
like
come back.
He's mostly playing Fab. So he's going to go to, he's going to play in Ottawa actually. I'm going to give him my deck. But otherwise he's pretty much into Fab. And then same with Isaac. Like Isaac will play like the Arena Opens, and like he actually played the Toronto RC. He went 6-2 on day one and then just didn't show up for day two because why not? yeah, so most of my prep is pretty much solo, but lately I've been playing more with David Booker. He's like a new addition to the team, and he is playing Magic. So he and I will test a little bit here and there. But otherwise, I hop into some leagues. I track my results. I see how I do for like the standard format. I pretty much just started to like try out like all the decks. Like I just put in like one league with like various different decks just to get a feel for the format and what was going on. And then very quickly decided I should just be playing Grixis. And it seems like clearly the best deck, and I don't know how I'm going to convince myself not to play Fable when it's in the format.
So is MTGO still the place to test Standard?
See, it wasn't until this RC season, I think, because it seemed like there were a lot of win traders and garbage like that. But as soon as like people started preparing for their RCs, it seemed like the leagues were actually really good practice. I was like half the names in my league were like people I knew, or like names I recognized, and like the games were good. So it seemed like good practice, and I didn't really want to touch Arena, so I didn't.
Derek, is that your experience as well?
Yeah, for the most part, I have a bit of an Arena collection because I drafted a bunch 2-ish years ago. So it wasn't as big of a deal for me. But just like dropping off on the ladder and starting out like bronze or silver is so brutal. And like Christoph said, the leagues aren't the worst. They're not my favorite because they just take so long. And it is just a bit of like, I find at least on Arena, people will play better decks because they can't really switch decks that often. A lot of people will argue that like there's better players on MTGO. I don't think there are. I think the play is almost exactly the same. If anything, Arena forces people to play one thing. And so you usually get people playing that one thing better because they played it more. But I think it evens out. I don't think there's a real big reason to play other than money. So like if you have a collection, I would just play on Arena, for example.
Okay. Christoph seems to agree. Christoph, you said you were going to lend your deck. So are you not playing Ottawa?
That's correct. I have family visiting that weekend, so I was never planning on playing Ottawa. So it kind of worked out. So I'm just going to, yeah, hand the deck to Sean and see what he can do with it.
All right. You mentioned Dave Booker, and Andy tweeted how it was great to learn more about you guys. Talk about that, Andy. What was the experience like?
That was wonderful. So I sort of like last minute made a post of like, hey, I'm staying in Vancouver. I'm going to Vancouver. I have nowhere to stay. And Dom Harvey sort of hit me up with the, I might be able to help you with that. But he said it, you know, like Dom Harvey, might be able to help you with that. And he sends me a DM saying like, yes, there is room. And it's with Christoph, who I do sort of know. Like, we don't know each other that well, but like, I've always liked Christoph. And Dave Booker, who I've never met before. And then so we get there, and it was honestly just such a good time. David Booker is one of the funniest people I've ever met. His sense of humor is so dry and like hilarious to me. Maybe it's because I'm a bit older now, and I appreciate such a dryness. But it was really funny, and Christoph's obviously an excellent time, and Dom is exactly as advertised. Yep, yep. And we had some cheeky Nando's, of course. And that was a delicious, excellent British experience.
That's great to hear. I'm comparing the list Christoph played and Misplaced Ginger. It looks like the main is basically the same, save for one or two cards. And Christoph, you went for more one-ofs in your sideboard versus Ginger's more concentrated sideboard. How was the sideboard for you for this tournament, Christoph?
I thought it was pretty solid. I regret registering the Nightclubber, though. It's probably just too narrow, unless you're expecting like a lot of soldiers and Toxic. So I regret that card, and would have liked to have fit a third Shieldred in the 75 somehow, maybe. And then maybe also another Exile removal for like the Razor Lashes, so like maybe one or two Flameblessed Bolts. But otherwise, I was pretty happy with it. I mean, Extract the Truth is kind of a spicy one that actually panned out. I thought it was quite good for me in the event.
What about Blade Coil Serpent?
Oh, yeah, that card's great. That's for the grindy matchups. Yeah, Blade Coil's awesome. There's one in the main, one in the side. I feel like you kind of have to hedge for a lot of mid-range matchups. You know, there's going to be a ton of Grixis. It's the most popular deck. It's the best deck. You know, there's going to be people playing mono white for some reason, trying to beat up on Grixis. And Blade Coil is one of your best ways to answer that deck. as far as like just making them discard a bunch of cards and then like hasting your Blade Coil and like killing their Planeswalker or whatever.
Yeah, like actually my bad. As I look closer, a lot of the one ofs in your sideboard are just because you shaved them from the main compared to Ginger's list. Like Brotherhoods, and instead of playing two in the main, you have 1/1. Blade Coil Serpent, instead of two in the main, you have, you know, a split of 1/1 as well. So it looks scattered, but it's not actually, you know, it's just like extra copies that you decide to shift to the sideboard instead.
Yeah, how many cutdowns is he running main?
One. I had one okay. Main, three in the board. It was a last minute change. I wasn't sure if I wanted to. I probably will play more going forward, for example, in the main.
Yeah, I was pretty happy running two. Like as good as Brotherhood's End is against the aggro decks, I felt like against mono red especially, like cut down was pretty crucial for surviving and not getting just run over by like a one drop, two drop start.
So how did the tournament go for you in terms of matchup, and what did you end up losing in the top eight?
So I played Grixis three times. I 3-0'd Grixis. I played mono red twice. I 2-0'd mono red, and then I split matchups against mono white. So I went 1-1 against mono white, 1-1 against toxic. And then I beat Mike Van Vels in the Swiss on his sweet Slurvik list, and then lost to him in the quarters. So he got his revenge. So that was fun. Loved our matches. They were both great. Although in part, the reason I won in the Swiss was because he had a bit of a clunky hand in game one, and I was on the play, and I just kind of run him over. And then the next two games were grindy, but I was basically up a free game.
So when we had just had him on before you, he mentioned he had an edge because a lot of people didn't know how his deck worked. Are you one of those people?
I definitely had to read some cards the first time we played.
All right, tell me sure the entire exactly. Text of Slowgurk right now.
Yeah.
Right now? Okay. So it's one blue green. It's a 3/3 with trample. It has whenever a land would be put into your graveyard from anywhere, put a 1/1 counter on it.
Wow.
Remove three 1/1 counters to return it to your hand. And then the last line is when Slowgurk would leave the battlefield, put all lands in your graveyard into your hand or something.
Close.
Like that. It's close. It's three, I think. Three.
Yeah, you tripped at the finish line. It's only three.
Oh, damn.
Oh, no, impressive. So you think that's a cool deck? What do you think about its legitimacy?
Honestly, I'm not entirely sure. I know like Van Vels is like a great player. Like obviously he piloted it very well. I think it's a bit of a clunky deck. I think Esper Legends is probably just the better version. But I know he wanted to Gurk, and he Gurked indeed. So it was sweet to see. But I think the Esper Legends list is probably just the better way to go if you want to do something like that. Like the curve of like Skrelv into Thalia into a three drop like Rafine is pretty hard for anybody to beat, I think.
Wow, that's exactly what Andy said. Might as well play Esper Legends. I think
so smart, so handsome. That's my boy.
I'm just telepathically connected to Andy at this point.
I think Van Vels mentioned how he didn't want to play Grixis because he didn't want to grind to an 8/5. Is something like he says? Derek, you think that? I'm pretty sure you think that's a common thing that people say that you don't disagree with. Like when people used to say that they didn't want to play Jund because they didn't want to coin flip every matchup. That's a mistake to how to view it, right?
Yeah, I think that's a heuristic that a lot of people lean on that just like isn't true. And Andy said this, like, I mean, I said it too. I would never suggest anybody play Van Vels' deck. I would also never suggest anybody play like a polarizing deck in general, because your deck's just less powerful. I think like if Van Vels just played Grixis, he would have a very similar result because he's just a tight technical player. He just wanted to play that deck more and had an edge because other people are also fish. I think that's like a really bad thing that people lean on, and they're like, oh, I have to spike this event. I have to play this deck that people aren't ready for. And it's like, no, you don't. Cause your opponents are just going to be fish no matter what. Because, like, as we see with, like, Van Vols talking about how people didn't understand that Slogurk had trample. And then it's like, okay, now your deck's just more powerful against the players who do know what they're doing. So, like, this goes back to, like, the agency king thing. It's like, if you just give the agency to your opponent to be knowledgeable or not, the first time you play against somebody good, you are going to lose. This is why people will spike PTQs and do awfully at the PT or, like, do well at a local GP and then just never do anything ever again because they have this bad mentality and they don't understand the importance of longevity and understanding how to play a good deck for a long period of time. They're just like, I have to spike now. This is my only chance. I have to be on the PT. I can't improve at the game. I just have to win. And it's like, yeah, you know what? You got it. Just beat up on the fish locally to you and continue to fall back down to the PTQ grinder area.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest copium things that people do to say, like, oh, I'm playing this deck because I want to come first or last. Like, that essentially doesn't exist or make sense.
Well, you're coming last.
Because it's not like your deck is like 90% to win or 10% to win and it like evens out in the middle or something like that. When the other deck is like 52% to win, it's just more likely to do better and more likely to have the spikes than the other deck. They just don't get it. They're just like, you can try and say that you want to put some of your percentage points into like matchup lottery or whatever you want to call it, and that might have some validity to it, but there's no validity in saying I'm going to play a deck that's either going to win the tournament or come last. I think that is extremely flawed thing that people say to try and talk themselves into playing bad decks. People don't ever say that when they're playing a good deck, ever.
A question for all of you, starting maybe with Christoph. Did you feel any skill level difference when it came to how the field was playing Pioneer versus Standard?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I know the Pioneer ones were way more popular. They had a lot more people. And I imagine that'll be the case for Ottawa as well. And maybe the Standard field, because it was like a little smaller, it was just like more of like the diehards, I guess, the diehard grinders. But I'm not entirely sure.
Any thoughts from you guys, Andy, Derek?
I would say that maybe the players were better on average, but the deck lists were worse. And my thought of saying that is like
for Standard?
For Standard, yes. My thought of saying that is that the best players are going to play both. So I think that the Standard event will be more saturated with the better players because they were going to play no matter what. But at the same time, so few people put a lot of practice into Standard that everyone's decks and preparation is just like 3 weeks behind. And even talking with people in like testing groups, they'll bring up something that I learned a month ago. And it just, that kind of stuff just makes you realize how little people are in the streets or how much more like people need to pay attention to Standard when they haven't been paying attention forever, right? So they don't pick up on the little things very fast. So I think probably player quality saturation higher just because of the way things sort of go. But at the same time, deck's probably a lot worse.
For me, this just kind of like, I mean, I felt this way already, but I think a lot of people who think they are good or people who think that other people are good, they're just not good. I don't know.
Hot takes episode, man.
There's no good. There's like, only Derek. There's only 2023 Derek.
Obviously, Edgar and Fournier are very good. I have a lot of respect for them. They think about the game a lot differently than other players I have talked about the game with. And when we looked at Kristoff's deck list going into day two, I remember Edgar saying, I really like Kristoff's deck. It looks like he put in some work and came to the right conclusions about things. And I agreed with him. Like our list was very similar. My list was very similar to Edgar's. And I felt that we had a good list for the event. The players that I'm working with are better than everybody else. They think about the game differently and they're building their deck better. And this isn't just like, oh, there are good players playing bad decks or, oh, there are good players not putting in work to their deck list. That just means those players are bad. That just means these people don't know how to build deck lists and they can't lean on the hive mind from Twitter. This standard format really shows that people don't know how to put time and effort into good deck building, don't know how to put time and effort into actually playing properly and learning play patterns, and they just lean on the same things they do over and over again. And nothing is changing. These people aren't getting any better. They're just spiking every once in a while, or they're having a good time. And like, you could say the same thing about me, and maybe that's true. Maybe next year I just don't have any success, but at least it'll be true, right? And I think like, if somebody is telling you like Mardu's broken or this deck's the best deck they've ever played, they're lying to you. They don't know what they're talking about. These people are bad. They can't play their way out of a paper bag and they're getting lucky. It's astonishing to me that so many people think that some of these players are playing well or doing well or having success because they're good. When in reality, it just shows to me that like nobody knows what they're doing, except for like a few select people, and those people don't care about the game. So when Andy says like it's probably a higher concentration of good players, I disagree. I think like I think maybe there's more good players in the first Toronto because those players cared about the game. Like Kasner, what's his I always forget his name. Kasner 3000, Isaac. He dropped at 6-2. He's one of the best players in Canada, and he dropped it 6-2. He doesn't care about the game. Dilks, Matt Dilks, is not playing Magic. He thinks it sucks. Tarek this week showed up, is one of the best players in the world at Flesh and Blood. And he like put in a little bit of time this week or for this event and like had a well-built deck and played much better than other people and just like didn't have a good day one. And then you have these people who are like, yeah, I'm playing five color Atraxa Reanimator. This deck's broken. Nobody cares about the game right now, or like they don't care enough. They're not putting in the time and effort. It's just, I don't know. These kids.
What's your point though? What's different between Toronto and this? Like Pioneer.
More people cared about OP because it was the first time back. It's local to Toronto. There's a much higher concentration of good players in Toronto. We're not flying to Vancouver. I also think that like when you have a group of people who care about the game, like Edgar and friends, or like I think DMAC is good at the game. I think DMAC, Sammy, and those guys, when they were caring about the game and not just being like the worst people ever, like they were good competition. You have like, if D-Root cared about the game more, if the Harry T guys came back and cared like the old school ones came back and cared about the game more, getting Fournier and like the 401 crew back in, the people we used to play at face-to-face, or like Morgan McLaughlin, he's going to Ottawa, but he wasn't at Vancouver. There's just so many more players. And like, this goes back to like just the concentration of better players in Ontario. When they care about the game, it's like a different world. Going to Vancouver, halfway across the country, like, I don't know. It's just, it's not the same. And you could see that in the way people built their deck lists, in my opinion.
Well, we did have 20% mono blue, so you may have a point when it comes to that.
That was wild. So much mono blue for no reason.
Yeah, that's not something you do if you've played standard, you know? Like,
all right. Any questions for Christoph or for you guys?
Yeah. First off, how did it feel to top 8 the regional championship?
It felt really nice. Yeah. It's funny, actually. I think like all my matches on day 2 were really close, except for my winning in. I felt like I was just in the driver's seat the whole match. I was against Blue-White Soldiers, and my opponent didn't really have like a lot of good grindy sideboard cards. I just looked at his 75 and I was like, I'm going to crush you. And I did.
Hell yeah. That's my boy. That's my dog.
All right. Okay. We got some dog action and some exposed brick that excited Derek in the background for Christoph. Yeah, that'll do for this episode. Thank you so much, Christoph, for coming on. And man, you've been great. Excited to have you back on. And I think Oh, Deepu's going to listen to this whole thing, so I hope he likes it. I hope he enjoys it. And if he had more questions that he wanted me to ask you, then tweet at me, Dave. Just tweet. Thanks again, Christoph.
Thanks so much for having me on. It was a pleasure, guys.
Righty. That was Christoph Vaugeois. And now we got Mike Van Vaals joining us, who top eight in not only this recent tour championship, top eight in Toronto as well, with Mono Green. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you. Andy and Derek told me to get you on the show, so I'm excited to talk to you, learn more about you. It's really good to see someone have continued success, seeing the same names over and over again, and you're someone that I guess we're going to see a lot more of in 2023 as well.
Well, that's my plan.
Let's start from like the beginning. Like, where did you get started playing Magic? Did you start at an LGS or online? Just to get to know a bit more about you, and let's start off with like where you're from.
Well, so I started playing back in university at Waterloo. There was just a club there I started playing at. I was like familiar with the game a bit beforehand, but that's when I like really started playing weeklies and stuff.
Which, were there any LGS that you went to frequently?
Not as much there. It was mostly like the university club that ran all the events that I played. I don't even remember the stores there anymore.
And this was how long ago?
It was like 2011, I think. I remember it was like original Innistrad. It was around that time. I think that was the year.
So were you playing like competitively since a long time, or just recently start to jump in?
So I started playing competitively like a few years after that. There was the first GP I played was in Toronto. I think it was Theros Sealed. Back original Theros, which I was like probably 2013, if I remember correctly.
So it has been a while then. You've been trying to. Did you have like pro tour aspirations and stuff like that?
Yeah, a bit. Like it was like those old videos Watts used to publish about like GPs and pro tours were all I used to watch those, and it was I always thought it'd be really cool to get on like the pro scene.
And so then what success did you find like between then and the top eight in Toronto?
Well, yeah, so I played my first PT in 2018, I want to say. It was the first one after they branded it as Mythic Championship. And then, yeah, since then I've played every paper PT.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. So how did you prepare? How do you prepare for these events then?
Well, mostly someone I know will just pull me into just tell me I'm on a testing team, and then I'll join a Discord and just start talking with whoever happens to be there. It depends a lot on the PT though, because like the different people queue every time, so the teams are always different.
But for the let's say the RCQs or the RCs, do you test like a local group of friends or?
Like sometimes a bit, yeah. There's a couple Discord groups I'm in, doing a bit of testing. Like for the RCs, I honestly didn't actually test that much. Like this most recent one, I just saw a similar deck to the one I played just on coverage at the Japanese RC. I just thought that looked fun, so I loaded it up on Arena and started playing it, and just kept winning. So, like, I figured it had some potential, but also I didn't really want to, I wasn't sure if it was actually good or not, or if I just happened to be doing well in Arena and didn't want to, you know, get anyone else on my testing team stuck on it unless they really thought it was good. Because, like, Dom was considering it for a while, I think, and decided it was too much of a risky choice, but then, every round as I was telling him how I was doing, he just like, I could tell in his face he was having big regrets playing white.
Andy, does Mike roam around the Discords that you're in as well?
Just one of them, really. Sometimes he shows up in a couple of them, but we tested the last few paper PTs together. thankfully we were both qualified for them. But not too often. Mike's kind of a weird deck guy, you know? You always have to have a weird deck guy around.
What do you think about the choice that he made?
I think it's probably worse than Esper Legends, just because like the mana's a bit worse, and it is obviously more powerful, but I don't think it is more powerful than it is its mana's worse. So I think Esper Legends is kind of just the better deck, but like people don't know what the heck Slowgurk does or how to play against his cards. So at a field like this, sometimes you can get a big advantage from that kind of stuff because a lot of people don't know the cards. But I tend to think with fields like regionals that are so soft that I just try to play it safe.
What do you think about the mana, Mike?
I think I was surprised to find the mana wasn't actually as bad as I was expecting. Like Plaza of Heroes in the Trilands put in a lot of work. But Andy's definitely right, though, that I did get a lot of game wins because people didn't read my cards properly. Like, multiple times in the tournament, I got to say, trample you for lethal, and my opponents were very confused for a second.
Are you planning to, now that you qualify, are you going to try to go to Ottawa as well?
So I've already booked everything for Ottawa, so I'll be there.
Do you think people will actually learn how the thing... how your cards work by then?
I've had a lot of people messaging me asking me for advice on how to like build or play the deck. So like, it sounds like there are some people interested, but like, it might lose some value now that people, you know how the deck operates. But you know, again, there wasn't coverage at Vancouver, so even looking at a deck list, people might still not know how it actually plays out.
What are some of the better or bad matchups were it then, besides people like not knowing how the engine works?
So I think mono red's basically unwinnable, especially if they play that Furnace Punisher card, because you have no basics and Cutdown doesn't kill it. So if they get that out, you basically just lose. Mono white's not great. It's especially bad if you're playing against the eight Field of Ruin deck. You just have no game if you're on the draw there.
Yeah, that's what you played. I mentioned, I saw like the winner tweet about Field of Ruin being really good for them, right?
I was joking with some people saying that I lost it in the world's invite by 3% tiebreakers because they got to be on the play. Because it's just like game three, I think they activated Field of Ruin or that other identical card, I think 7 times in that game, and I never got to play a 3-drop.
Demolition Field?
Yeah,
it was really cool. There's a lot of people like crowded around watching, and I'm sure Mike felt this as well. As his chances of winning the game wisped away, so did all of his friends watching, as he could cast a single spell. And someone would roll over like, other guy's got 7 lands in play, Mike has literally nothing. And my only condolences to Mike at the time was at least when you packed it all in, you just had to pick up your graveyard.
That's true. It was very scooping was very quick,
efficient for sure.
Andy, you tweeted the amount of people I have to tell redacted is unplayable is crazy. I made fun of this deck on the way to the RC, and now people just want to play it. Magic just can't be real. Are you able to reveal the answer to our listeners?
Yeah, I can absolutely reveal the answer. So on the way to the regional championship, I meet up with a young Daniel Fournier, and we're exchanging some stories about our testing, and I said, I played against this deck that was the most unplayable deck I've ever seen. It went like turn one, Kumena, the red one drop that needs to have more red creatures. And then on turn two, they like killed one of my guys. And on turn three, they played a Graveyard Trespasser. And it's basically that red-black deck that Karani did well with. Eduardo is just... once again, scammed a bunch of people into an unplayable deck because he's a fantastic player. But all you have to do is look up what he played in RC Toronto, and you know that sometimes he gets very lost in the sauce, and I don't think the sauce is one that other people should be drinking. You know?
For yourself, how did you do, Andy?
I lost playing for my win and in for day two to a young Daniel Fournier.
And what were you playing?
I was playing Grixis midrange. I actually think I ended up with like a really good list. So I was happy with my preparation and my play in the tournament. Some things just didn't swing my way. Like played against mono red twice where they just have to not have like the last card in their hand be a burn spell and their top card be a burn spell and I win. Or the other one was like they have to not draw three Koths. I could beat the first two against mono red. And then I lost a mirror where I think their deck might have been a little better for the mirror overall. Certainly game one. And they won game one. And then we just kind of played a long game three. And that kind of stuff happens in these kind of tournaments. But I was happy with my list. I was happy with my play. And sometimes things just don't break your way.
I think when I told you like we were going to put up like it was tweeted, the metagame with Grixis at number one, mono blue temple, number two, mono red. And third, were you surprised at any of the metagame numbers when they were put up?
Yeah, everyone was obviously surprised by mono blue because it's not a very good deck. And to be the second most played deck in like the most major tournament we have in Canada pretty much is like an embarrassing call for those 25 people or whatever. Because that deck is not good. It won like 40% or less than that for the second most played deck. And yeah, it's a rough one. One of the things I always tell people who are like trying to break through in Magic and the pro stuff is when you leave a tournament, try and always have the feeling that you played a good deck and that you played well. And even if these people played well, they can't say yes to the other one.
I'm looking at like the highest placing was Mohammed Caddy at 30th with mono blue tempo. How's the matchup, Mike, for your deck against Grixis midrange?
I think it's good. Like that was the main reason I played it is that you can just sort of outgrind them with Takanuma, and if they can't exile your graveyard, the Slogurk and Takanuma just keep getting each other back essentially forever. And if they can't fly over you with something like Atraxa that some of the midrange decks have been jamming in there, then it's you just sort of eventually run them out of cards, and then you've still got this 3/3 with counters sitting on it on the battlefield.
Okay. Derek, did you end up playing Grixis as expected, or did you go with something else?
Yeah, I played Grixis.
And how did it go for you?
I mean, I probably shouldn't complain too much, but I finished 18th. I drew round 12 and then lost round 13 to Van Vols. both were winning ins. Where if I win either of those matches, I top 8. I mean, obviously, I shouldn't complain about finishing 18th, but I was upset that I was in that position and then lost.
Are you likely to just run it back? Do you still think it's the best deck?
Yeah, I'm with Andy. I think if you aren't playing Grixis, you're throwing. And then, like, whatever deck you decide to play is, like, how much you're throwing by. I think when Van Vols says, like, yeah, I won matches because nobody knows what my cards do, just shows how soft these players are and how bad everybody is at Magic, and how there's a lot of people out there who think they're good because they've had some success at their local level and won some RCQs, but they're losing because they can't read that Slogurk has trample. It's on the card. It's not like like just read it, just pick it up, you know, like come on. I don't know, like people can make mistakes, but it just blows me away that like the top 8 was just half the decks were just unplayable. Sorry, Van Vols, and you beat me. Scoreboard. But I would never suggest anybody play your deck in a million years. I don't know. I think not playing Grixis is like you have to have a really good reason. I can't think of a good reason. I don't know a single good reason to not play Grixis. Like maybe you don't want to spend money. There's a good reason. If you were like, I want to spend $20 on mono blue and I think I'm just going to play the next format more, I'd be like, okay, that's a better reason than being like, yeah, I'm going to reg Mardu because I think it's better. I would look at you like, all right, congrats on your not day twoing.
For what it's worth, I think there's not, Grixis isn't the only playable deck. Like, if someone said, what decks would I recommend? I would basically say, I wouldn't give you any flack if you played Mono Red, if you played Grixis, or if you played Esper Legends.
I guess I should clarify. I don't think Grixis is the only playable deck. I just think, like, if you want to do well in an event, Grixis is going to give you the best opportunity to do that. And putting effort into learning a different deck is worse than just learning Grixis or learning it better than your opponents. You can play Mono Red and build your deck to beat the three or four color decks, but you'll just get paired into Mono White too. Like, you know, whatever.
I'm seeing like the pricing you mentioned, Derek, like Mono Blue on MTG Goldfish in the 57th, $44 for the whole deck.
Yeah. Yeah, so. when you think about like Grixis, it's just four fables to start, and then it goes up by $80 every time you add a Shieldred, and you like start to think like, I queued for this thing, I'm just spending a weekend away playing Magic. You really start to think like, am I going to spend $500 for this weekend on a deck? Unlikely.
With like Mono White winning, we're seeing, well, the top eight had also two Azorius Soldiers. I guess you assume, Derek, that in Ottawa, Grixis will still be the most popular. Maybe we see a lot less Mono Blue tempo, maybe a bit more Mono White. How do you see that playing out?
It could be completely random. I'm going to be honest with you. People will jump through any sort of hoops and copium themselves into believing anything's good. Yeah, like Grixis is very difficult. It's a three-color mana-based deck with a lot of different choices. Fable's a really hard card to play. There's a lot of different like archetypes in the format, like Esper, that have a lot of moving parts. Like I played against Van Vols, and there's multiple turns where he could have had any lands, multiple creatures that are good against me, or like just complete bricks. And like nobody's on that level. Are playing enough standard where they've memorized the play patterns. So they're just going to like justify their reasoning and go down these rabbit holes and be like, I'm going to play Mardu because I don't know how to cast a counter spell. Or like maybe people decide Mono Red's the best deck because they saw somebody did well with Furnace Punisher, or maybe they play Esper Legends because it did so well in Europe. I think people probably won't play Mono Blue as much if they actually care, but it is $40. So I think Grixis will be the most played, but I also think the rest of the meta could be completely random. It's
hard. Yeah, I hear so many people who like come up to me talking about what they're going to play for the tournament. They're like, I don't want to learn the Grixis mirrors. And so then they show me this unplayable deck that they're going to play instead. And I try to explain to them, like, what would you rather be playing? Like the Grixis mirror where you feel like you're a little bit, like, I don't know, you don't know quite enough about the mirror. Or would you rather be playing a bad deck against Grixis, like this nice, efficient mid-range deck that can like mold its game plan around what it's playing, especially when they see your deck list? What would you rather be doing?
They're learning to humble themselves. They're trying to give themselves perspective on losing. So when they finally like get to winning, it means so much more. That's why they're not playing Grixis. And unless you're like Van Vols, who just, you know, crushes it with Esper Slowgurk, like it's unlikely that not playing Grixis is a good idea. IMO.
I've been loving your run, Derek, since like the beginning of this new system, playing what you consider the best deck each time, regardless of it being target number one and doing well. So I think it's just, you're like that, the model to follow, of not being afraid of like mirror matches or anything.
Yeah, it's been really healthy for Derek to finally have like a lot of success in a row. It's been really good for, you know, interacting and dealing with Derek. It's been excellent for trying to get information about Derek. Every matchup is good for Derek. The best strategy is to Derek at any tournament.
I queue in. I'm watching Andy play like Grixis last night. He has a Misery Shadow in play. I'm like, why do you have this in your deck? He's like, I wanted to try it. I'm like, what does it do for you? He's like, I don't know. It's probably bad. I'm just like, Andy, come on, man.
No, that thing exiled some stuff. It's no longer in the list, though. It's a 2-2. Who knew?
Too funny, Derek. No! Just imagine you saying that.
Andy, what are you doing now?
Mike, what's going to change your mind possibly from playing your deck from now into Ottawa, or are you likely just like going with it?
I think I'll probably just run it back again. I could see playing Esper as well. I think that's a really strong choice right now, but I think that I think this deck is just really fun to play is the main reason. Like, and I have the queue for the PT now, so it's so like, you know, I don't need to do well at this one. I think I just want to play something I enjoy.
Oh, yeah, sweet. So one last question for you. There's a lot of players that sometimes come to me that have been, you know, struggling at the RC, or like come finish with a mediocre record or failed to make day two with multiple tries. Would you have any advice for these players of how you've been able to, you know, consistently do well?
I think it's mostly just about playing a lot of events, really. Like, I take every opportunity almost every weekend to play some sort of competitive Magic. And if you're playing enough, like, you'll just eventually hit some good runs at some of the events. Because that was sort of my goal with this event, right? Like, instead of playing Grixis and just taking like a solid, like, you know, a reasonable shot at like 8-5 or something, I decided to play something wacky and either, like, I was going either for the top 8 or miss day 2 and then get to play Canlander. But I think, like, the most important thing, I think, is just as long as you enjoy playing Magic, just play a bunch of it, and you'll eventually figure out exactly what like lane to be in terms of what deck you want to play.
Man, that reminds me of when we had Dan Schneider on for after his top 8 with after his success, actually not top 8. He had a good day 1 with Mono Green in Toronto. He mentioned he picked that because of the high variance of the record with the deck. Like, Mono Green, you're either gonna crush it with a lot of matchups or the draws, of the draws as in the cards that your opening hands, or you're gonna just lose really badly instead of having a mediocre record. Did you see Mono Green as the same type of deck as well? And is that what you're looking for in terms of what kind of deck you would want to play at these tournaments?
Well, so the reason I played Mono Green, I think, was just because the Brothers War had just come out, so the it got a big boost to its sideboard options, and I think the metagame hadn't quite adjusted to that yet. Some people still thought it was just sort of like a stompy deck, but it was much more of a combo deck at the time. But yeah, that was my main reason for playing it. But then I switched off it pretty quick after the RCs before the PT, because I think it dropped a lot in viability after people properly adjusted for it.
All right. Do you guys have any? Oh, actually, I had one. Like, a lot of my friends wonder, go like, what the hell's Canlander? Why is it popular?
So it's like, it's sort of like EDH, except it's not awful, really. Like, it's like all of the like it has all my favorite parts about Magic and the like high variance of playing way too many colors than I should. But also it's 1v1 and competitive. So it's got like, yeah, it's got all the good stuff of EDH, but also all the good stuff of like competitive 1v1 Magic.
Is there a local scene like here? Because I know we decided to try it out in Vancouver because the organizers were confident that there'd be players to play there. What about in your area?
So there used to be a store in London that would run it weekly, and that's how I was first introduced to it. And for a while, it was just that one store in London, and then Vancouver was basically the only place in the world that played it. But then the store in London stopped running it, so I was It was really nice to see that it had such a good turnout in Vancouver, though.
Yeah, I heard Commander was going strong as well. And so despite people being scared that the second season or round was going to have a lower attendance, I mean, we ended up being really happy with the numbers that of the people that came out. Andy nodding. Were there a lot of people?
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Those Commander players, they're freaks in all the right way, you know? Like, they just love that stuff. They come out. And they spend money, you know?
You really got to be careful when you call the Commander players freaks.
Well, I said it all the right ways.
No. They'll.
Derek, this is why you don't have an e-girl.
No, well, yeah, it's because don't call the Commander players freaks. I'm not associated with you calling them freaks. I love Commander players.
Yeah, I love them too. Okay. They subsidize everything we do.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Mike. It was great to learn about your deck and how you were able to get an edge on the players who didn't know what the heck was going on. And good luck at the PT and good luck in Ottawa.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thank you.